Hello, world! Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. We're also on live tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI FM 99.5, and we'll be taking live phone calls there, but here we're on PRN.FM. I'm Hank Key in the studio, and I'm with Joe King, and you can listen to the stream and join us on the air with your telephone calls, and you can share your opinions, make comments, and the toll-free number is 888-874-4888. And for those who do not have internet access or have a limited data plan, you can listen over the phone by dialing 712-775-6850 if you have unlimited minutes. For more information, go to our website, pcradioshow.org. Hey, Joe, there's a lot that's going on today, and I like to catch up with what's in our mailbag. And one of the questions that we've been
Before you do that, Hank, let me tell folks that they can write to us at pcradio@gmail.com.
And, you know, we seem to be getting a lot of email, but people seem to be bashful about calling on the phone. Are they afraid to talk to us?
No, I think that an awful lot of folks are listening to us on the PRN podcast system, where all month, maybe all year, each show will be up and can be downloaded, but the only time we can get live phone calls is from 6 to 7 on Wednesday nights here at PRN.
And the number is 888-874-4888, and just give us a call, and we'll try to find you on the phone. We have an email from Tamara, and she had three short questions. Is my problem with AOL or Windows 10 that when she signs on, the font is super tiny? What do you think that is, Joe?
Well, that's an adjustable feature of, it depends on which version of Windows she's using.
She's using Windows 10.
And 10 I'm not familiar with, Hank, so you'll have to tell her where on that she can change the font size.
Well, actually, it's in the browser that she's using. And so if you use in the browser, like I use Chrome, okay? Mm-hmm. And in Chrome, you go to setting, and you could set the font size you have to very tiny or medium or large and so on. So that's where you can make your adjustment. Now, she has AOL, but AOL is mail, and if she's using an AOL browser, I'm not familiar with that, but she could give it a try. Look for settings in either the mail or the browser itself. Okay. Now, the other question she asked is, she has an 8-gigabyte USB SanDisk flash drive. She wants to know how much space is on it. And I have to interpret it in three different ways. One is how much of actual space there is on it, because it varies from flash drive to flash drive, even though they're marked 8 gigabytes. And one of the things you can do is you can just go to properties and you can see what it is. I will tell you one thing, though. It's not 8 gigabytes. It's 8 gigabytes before it's formatted, and after it's formatted, it's more like 10% less. So don't be surprised if the 8 gigabyte is more like 7.5 gigabytes. And if you want to know how much it's free, what you can do is go to properties and take a look. But she has an interesting question, though, okay? There are many different websites. Is there such a way of finding out what each website, what their focus or what their genre is?
I would say basically no. You can go to each of the websites, and generally, you'll find something on there that gives you some statement. It might say about us or something like that, and you can look at it. But I don't know of any general index for such things.
Well, we're taking calls at 888-874-4888. And we have another question, and this is from an old friend, Susan. And now, I understand this is a real tough question, Joe, because I really have no real answer. She says, my client has a DUI arrest in May of 2015. She was not actually driving and was acquitted of all charges, but her photo and info is on her DUI. You know, it appears when you go on the internet. How does someone get rid of that?
Basically, I don't think one can get rid of that, but there are some companies that claim that they can help you out of such a situation. One of them is out there at a charge that Rick's called Reputation something or other.
Are you vouching for them?
I am absolutely not vouching for them, and I'll tell you why, Hank. If this person got a DUI summons, and I happen to keep a record of my own of all the DUI summonses in my neighborhood so that my children could be protected, I might have that on my website, on a section of my website that only subscribers can go to. How is this company called Reputation able to get into my hidden website?
Well, this is a real tough one because what I suspect what happened is that her client may have been drinking, but she wasn't driving, and therefore she was acquitted. But it goes on. I mean, it doesn't go on her legal record, but unfortunately in the social record, if someone is going through social media.
Hank, it's worse than that. She didn't even have to be in the car. She didn't have to be in the same country. If it was a total mistake.
Oh, no, someone just put the name up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. We have another question, and there's two answers to this. Janina has a question. She bought a licensed copy of a piece of software, and it doesn't matter what the software is, but she downloaded the software, and she wants to know how to make an image of it. And I think what she's saying is, you know, you can buy software today, and it comes if you download it, comes in two forms. One is it comes in a compressed format called RAR or ZIP, and the other is it could be an ISO format. And I guess her question is, you know, you download it, now how do you get it to run? And there's two answers. One, if you're running Windows 10, you do nothing. All you do is just open up the file, and you can see everything there broken up. In other words, everything is automatically unzipped, or the ISO file, it's broken up into subdirectories for you. If, however, you're not running Windows 10, but you're running Windows XP or Vista or 7, you have to download a program called win.rar. If it's a zip file, another program you can use is 7zip, 7zip. For ISO file, you're going to have to go through a utility to create that executable and put it onto either optical media or flash drive.
What and utility would you recommend for that?
There's a couple I use, but the one I use that is pretty easy to use is called Rufus, R-U-F-U-S. So. Now, Windows 10, don't have to worry about it at all.
And people keep telling me there's no reason to upgrade to Windows 10. You keep telling me it's got all these great tools in it.
Well, you know, you haven't gone to Windows 10 yet, and because you're a non-believer, and I'm the one that's always sticking my toes in the water, go first. You always tell me, go first. If you have problems, I learn from it.
Right, but you're saying stick your toes in the water. That doesn't bother me. Putting my neck on the line, that's what bothers me.
No. It's me who do it first, so therefore it's not your neck, it's my neck, okay? Now we have another question, which is, it's a comment. It's not a question, okay? Neil sent a comment, and he wrote a big, long thing, and I thank him for his kind words. He says, the New York Times has recently printed that and had the following, saying that, it's impossible to upgrade to Windows 10 free from 7 or 8 if you miss the deadline.
Well, the deadline was when, Hank?
End of July.
We have missed it then.
Well, I will answer the question this way. If you happen to have a distribution copy that of Windows 10 build 1511, you can upgrade 7, 8, or 8.1. And that's very easy to do, and you don't have to change the date. You don't have to be online. It will upgrade. And where can you find Windows 10 build 1511? It's available in different places.
But how do I know which build I have? I happen to have right now.
No. Oh, you mean you already have one?
I have a build. What do I have?
Well, when you if you have that build and you try to upgrade, and it says you can't, that means you don't. You have 1607 and not 1511, because there's only two builds out. Those are the only two, okay?
And it doesn't do any damage if I try to install the wrong build?
It won't install, therefore there's no damage. Now, the other question is, can he upgrade? And this was, I know we had the discussion on that, and this is my interpretation of what he wrote, because what he said is, can XP Vista W10? And to me, I interpret it as, can you upgrade Vista or Windows XP to Windows 10? And the answer is not directly. If you have a copy of Windows 7 you can go to, then you go extra hop to you upgrade it to 7, 8, or 8.1, and then you go to 10.
Well, suppose I have 1501?
1511. By the way, 1511 means that it was released in November, which is the 11th month of the year. And 15 refers to 2015, so it's called 1511. And the second release of Windows 10 is called 1607, which is 2016 this year, in the month of July. See, very simple.
So, fine, but if I have either of those two, I cannot install them if I have a Vista?
If you bought a license copy of Vista or XP, you can do you have a serial ID, so you can use that as a direct install, but it's a clean install. It won't do an upgrade.
And what's the difference?
Well, upgrade means that you could keep the data and move the programs over if they're movable and if they're compliant to run on the Windows 10. Otherwise, a clean install means you have to do a clean installation of all the application programs.
And you also lose all the data from previously?
No, not necessarily, because what it does is that whatever, if you format the drive, yes, you lost everything. But if you did not format the drive, it takes whatever data is in there, puts it into Windows.old, but the data may be there, but the programs won't execute. Got you totally confused, right?
I'm beyond totally confused.
And you want to move to Windows 10 tomorrow?
Well, I'll tell you what I did do today. There's a program that you mentioned a long time ago called, I forgot the name of it. It's to make a copy of the disk. It's Mirror.
Are you talking about Acronis?
No, not Acronis. Acronis costs you. This is a free shareware program.
Yes.
And I booted it up, and the first thing it said, before you go any further, have you made a safety disk? A restore disk. Mm-hmm. So I made a restore disk, and then
by the way, the name of the program is called Macromedia.
Macromium, right. And I did the backup disk, and then I started the full picture or image disk. Hank, it took a couple of 3 hours.
If you got a lot of treasures on your drive, it's going to take a long time. If you have little data, then it's going to be very short. And you know what? That means that, you know what you just told me? You haven't done any backup.
Why would that matter?
Because if the system had crashed, you would have had nothing.
No, but why do you say I didn't do any backup?
Because if you had been backing up, then if you had to do a backup from the last point, it wouldn't have taken that long.
Yes, it would, because I did backups, but I didn't use Macromium to do the backups.
No, okay. Now, Macromium, there's many different ways of doing it. What you were using Macromium was in the free copy, you did an image copy, which is the whole drive. They do have the pro copy, the Macromium pro copy, is that you can do a save, and then each day that goes by, it does incremental saves, okay?
Right.
And if you had done that, it would have been a short save, but then when you restore, just restore everything. You don't have to go backwards at all on it, okay? So that's how I know you haven't done backup.
Well, actually, I've done backups, and what this does...
Yeah, will you do it once every 2 years?
No, I back up things that I need as I create them. So if I needed a piece of music, or I downloaded a book, or something that I wanted to keep permanently, not just work pages, I would make two copies of it, one on my hard disk and another copy that goes into the files. Most people don't work that way, but it's really a manual way of doing... what's that form of backup hard disk...
You really haven't done any backup. First of all, let me talk about backup, okay? You could do a full backup, or you can do an incremental backup, okay?
No, that's if you want to do a backup of the disk or of a folder, but that's not...
No. Wrong. Incremental backup is it will back up a file that was changed. It doesn't have to be the whole folder, okay?
Does it have to be the whole file?
It does the whole file.
See, that's... To me... The purpose of a backup is so that you have an archival copy in case something goes wrong.
Right.
And you probably don't, if you're probably
wait,
like
wait, wait,
me.
Wait, let me finish.
You're probably like me. You don't need an archival copy of everything. Do you really need an archival copy of a letter that you sent to Aunt Minnie?
Well, let me put it this way. It, with incremental backup, the way Windows 10 does it and some of the backup programs do is that there is an archive bit, and once it backs it up, it turns off the archive bit saying you saved it. And if the date and time don't and the size don't match up, it says, oh, I have to do another backup. But it doesn't write over the old file. What it does, it gives you multiple copies of it. And then when you restore, you could say, I could restore everything the most recent, or I want to go back to a certain point.
So that I don't call an archival copy. That I call a junk copy. You're copying everything, whether you need it or don't need
I didn't say that. It only backs up where there is a change, and it makes another a copy of the file. It doesn't destroy the old copy of the file.
And you end up, as I did in the old days, that was the days of floppy or of tapes, I ended up with gallons of stuff.
No, you shouldn't, because I'll tell you what I do is that I have a external hard disk drive. On an external hard disk drive, I have three copies of it, okay? And I rotate those every third day. So what happens is that I have a full copy of everything that represents, every third day, and I only put changes on, okay, so that, like, say, today is Wednesday, all right, and the last time I backed up would say, let's say, Sunday, all right, so I would, I would add whatever changes were from Sunday to Wednesday. Everything in between are on other disk drives, so if I have to go back to it, it's still there.
But if you're working 5 or 6 hours a day, you're creating all kinds of files, all kinds of data. Do you really want backups of everything?
Well, first of all, the way most backup programs work is that it only saves when you say, here is the time or the day, or, time of day I want to save. In the case of Windows 10, you have the option of saying, I want to save at the end of day, or I could save every 15 minutes. So if there's a change, give another one. A good use of this would say, let's say you're writing your that last final novel that you're writing, okay, and you have a plot line there in the morning, and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon you say I'm scrubbing the whole thing, and you just eliminate the whole thing and you start a new plot line. 4 o'clock you say I want to go back to the one that was in the morning. You could still do that.
Well, it's that is not, to me, too practical, but where my method of backing up is a total failure, as Hank pointed out to me some years ago, was I would, at the end of the day, say, oh, I've done 2 more chapters, I want to save those, and I want to save them off-site, so I'll make a copy of them, and nowadays I send them up into the cloud, but in the old days I would make a floppy of them and take them home with me. That's not sufficient because, as Hank pointed out to me, I back them up at, let's say, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but at 3:30 in the afternoon, I get a crash, and it goes. Then my problem is I don't have a copy. So what Hank is saying, back up during the day, back up every 10 minutes, every hour, every half hour, whatever is a logical time for you.
Well, it depends on, okay, because if it's music that you're editing, you may want to do that, but once it's edited, you just want to do one single backup, and you know that if it's never going to change, and that's,
right.
You don't have to
do it. The incremental backup is for things that you're working on. They're not archival backups. Like, if all you want is archival backups, when you're finished it, you don't need anything in between. If you get a crash halfway through it, you don't care. Then that's an archival backup. And that's a whole different system, and one day we'll talk about why mine is better than Hank's. In between that, understand that everything Hank says is better than mine.
Well, we had some big-time news this past week, and I looked at it, and then I put two and two together. A couple weeks ago, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had reported that Yahoo had said that there was a breach where there was 500 million accounts where the passwords and profiles were compromised, and we made a comment that, it's pretty poor and so on. And now it comes out that it was reported by Reuters yesterday, and I said, listen, as Joe, Reuters,
They're not always the most accurate in stories like this.
Well, they are accurate in terms of the information they give, but if they give you half the story, that's not the whole thing, okay? However, I also picked it up from Yahoo themselves, and also picked up from the American Civil Liberties Union, and also from other sources. And when you tie everything together, what happened was that in 2014, there was a major breach at Yahoo, and they hired a security chief. His name is Stamos, and he has very high credentials. And what happened was that he quit last year. He was hired about 2 years ago. He quit last year, and he was very angry because what happened was that the federal government, I think it was the NSA, I forgot which branch it was.
You know what NSA stands for?
Yeah, not secret anymore, right? And what they did was they asked that Yahoo make available all the email, the whole content of everything. And which they did, and he was livid. He says, wait a minute, number one is you don't do that, and number two is the way you set up the back door, it's not secure.
Well, it's two stories there. The NSA has the right to issue a national security letter, and that letter in essence says anything you own is ours. We're allowed to look at it. And you cannot tell anybody that we're looking at it. You have a gag order at the same time. That's one half of the story. Yes, that's been tested in the courts, and it has to go through FISA, the federal, what is it?
Well, it
goes through a FISA court.
The FISA court, right.
And if, as far as I know, the FISA court has never turned the NSA down on such a request. At least it's not on the record. That's one problem. The second problem is they don't generally ask for, so therefore they're not generally given, a blanket warrant to open up everything.
You have to specify what you want. But in this case, they want everything.
But it's not just to specify what you want. You have to specify what you want from a person or from an entity or from something, an address, it doesn't matter what. They made it easy on themselves, and they said, anything you got, we want to look at.
No, everything they want, everything you have.
And they wanted it in real time, or the ability to read it in real time.
And so the...
In order to do that, they needed a back door, Hank.
Yeah, but you know what? If you have a security chief there, if you say, we have to do it, at least let him look at, see how secure it is, instead of saying, we're not going to tell him we're doing it. They didn't tell him they were doing it, and he quit because he says, wait a minute, you didn't run this by me.
And he said, I'm here to guarantee your security, and you're telling me things are happening that I don't know about. How can I guarantee your security? He walked out the door. Now, was he hysterical? Was he paranoid? Was it an ego trip for him? Well, you tell me, Hank, what happened?
Well, it doesn't matter. He was concerned with security. And there's two sides of the story. I was listening to some of the talking heads on cable TV today, and they say, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. At least we would, you'd be able to find out who the terrorists are. I got news for you. It didn't stop any terrorists at all, okay?
You know, it did something else for me. It proved that the terrorists have been successful because the whole object of terrorism is to get you to the point where you have to change your system, your method of living. You have to change your democracy to their fascism or whatever they have. That's what the terrorists are there for, to disrupt your life. And here they did it without any bloodshed. They took over our government, in essence, at least in the security of our government.
Now, if you just, it was only one incident. Because of this one incident, everyone has to take off their shoes when they go to the airport.
That's another example. And because it's got the capability of creating a bomb from a quart of liquid that's brought in, everybody has to use 3-ounce bottles for their cosmetics. The point is that you can have security. The Israelis have some of the best security in the world, but they don't allow some of these other things to happen to change their way of life, their government. At any rate, he was called, Stockton was called a paranoid, an egoist, all of these things. And he quit last year. What happened after he quit, Hank?
The hackers got into it, and that's how they...
How'd the hackers get in?
Because it was not secure. And by the way, it is reported that the hackers are called Group E. It's a small Eastern European hacking group. And guess what? They also not only have they breached Yahoo, but it's also Dropbox, LinkedIn, and Tumblr.
Well, Tumblr I'm not familiar with.
But that, by the way, the total is 3 billion accounts were compromised.
I didn't know there were that many accounts.
People could be on Yahoo and Dropbox, even though it's one person. So they're talking about accounts, not people, okay?
Well, all I know is the story came through, and I immediately went through all of my stuff on Dropbox, file by file, and I decided, all right, I don't want people to have it, but it's not going to do me any harm.
Yeah, but LinkedIn is used very differently, okay? And that is really, I would be concerned because a lot of people use LinkedIn to apply for jobs, and you have
yes,
a lot of personal information on that.
Yes, you do, and yes, they do. And I'm going to now repeat something I've been saying for I don't know how many years, Hank. I've been saying only put online that information that you would be comfortable with if on Sunday at church your grandmother stood up before the congregation and read it off to everybody. If you're not comfortable with that, don't put it online.
Well, what we're recommending is that Dropbox, LinkedIn, Tumblr, change your password. In the case of Yahoo, I have to be very honest with you. The way they run the company, I don't want to do anything on Yahoo.
And yet I know you do.
Not really.
Well, you're a member of the BAI lists, which are run on Yahoo.
I don't go to it.
They go to you. They have your email addresses.
Unfortunately, they have my email address. But you know what? It can't be compromised since I don't use it. I have no, you know,
It's safer, but not. Yeah. There was certain information you had to put on to get subscribed to those lists, and now anybody has it. It's a problem. You can get. Hank, I can tell you exactly how to be 100% safe in this in this whole situation. 100% foolproof safe.
Yeah, I use a chisel and a stone.
And instead of a calculator, you use your abacus and just, take your computer and put it in the closet.
No.
Also, at the same time, take your telephone, because that could be tapped. And I think you should paint your windows black.
By the way, I'm joking now, okay? But... the way I've been hearing so many people having cell phone lines and so on, guess what? The phone companies are doing a great job of making it very secure because we're not getting things through anymore on the cell phone. Now we're getting dropped lines. I'm talking to you, and all of a sudden, Joe, you're still there? Or you're talking to me, and all of a sudden say, wait a minute, am I talking to myself?
And I, half the time, do you remember that old commercial that Verizon used to have, can you hear me now?
They don't do that anymore.
No, because everybody was saying, no, I can't hear you now.
Hey, I got a couple of short news items that people would like to hear about. A couple of weeks ago, a month ago, HP was, they were blocking out third-party ink cartridges. And they said they made an announcement 2 days ago that they have taken that off the books. They reserve the right to go back to it in the future, but because of all the PR and that and many of people are saying that the quality of print is really not all that different, so HP backtracked on that. So that's good news. Okay. Now the other one is New York State passed a new law, Joe, and of course I know that we have listeners beyond New York State, but we hope that other states may also do it too. New York State said that if someone passes away, the termination charges by all these cell phone companies, you can't keep charging.
Well, you don't understand. Hank didn't give you the background on that. Verizon and other phone companies and many other, not just phone companies, give you a premium when you join them. Might be a discounted telephone, or it might be the ability to pay your phone off gradually. And in return for that, they say you must have a one-year contract or two-year contract. And if you break your contract early, there'll be a termination charge. And in many cases on Verizon, I looked and it was a $300 charge, even though you might only have owed them $100 more on the thing. Well, it turns out that if you died, and I hope none of you have, but for those of you who have died.
And you're listening.
And you're listening now. If you got, you might have gotten a bill saying you've discontinued your contract, so you have a termination charge of $200. Now you're dead, and you can't call them up and tell them to do something to themselves. So your daughter, your son, your mother, your father, somebody in the family ends up paying that charge because they're clearing up all the bills that you left behind after you died. And thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people got clobbered with these charges.
Well, in New York State, the bill imposes a $1,000 fine for any phone, internet cable, or power operator that attempts to charge a recently deceased person an early termination charge. I think that's at least, and hopefully other states can follow through on that. Oh, by the way, Joe, I can understand what Samsung is going through, and they've done a good job. The latest is that 80% of the recall phones on the 7, they made good on so far.
You mean on the 7 Note?
7 Note, right.
That the battery was blowing up, literally blowing up.
And there's been 80% return, and they've done a, let's put it this way, they've done two things. One is they acted promptly, they didn't try to store, and, whether they get 100% or not, I don't know, because some people continue to use it. But now, you know what's been happening? I'll just tell you. iPhone are bursting into flames. There are reported cases of it.
Two cases.
Well, in the case of Samsung, it was only 7 out of how many million? 2 million, okay?
The thing that some people objected to with Samsung is they never went to the government and said, we have a problem. Normally, they should go to the Consumer Product Safety Board or some such place. And the government would supervise the recall so that none of them were left out in the field by accident. Samsung didn't do that. They said, we can handle it ourselves, but there's no, I have to say that some people out there are very stupid, but there's no requirement that you return your explosive Samsung 7. And if you take it on a plane with you and it happens to explode and I happen to die in a crash, I'm never going to talk to you again.
Now, in the case of the iPhones, Apple's saying, we'll look into it. In other words, if they don't look into it very quickly and come up with some statement, it's going to be a bad PR.
And people still could possibly die if it explodes on an airplane that you're riding on. Listen, this is not good. We have a government that sometimes does good and sometimes does bad. Here they've done good, but Congress decided not to put a law in saying you have to use the government procedure. I'm frustrated.
Well, one of when we come up with a lot of these stories, okay, and we do some research on it, I don't want to get it from AP or Reuters or Forbes, anything like that. I like to go to the original document, from .gov, from the organization itself on the press releases. So at least I get the words and not something that it was written in a way that might be slanted. And one of the things I find is that the law is written in almost all cases by the manufacturer and not by the lawmakers themselves.
Well, that's the reason. That's a very good, actually, it's a good thing.
It's a good thing?
Oh, absolutely, because most of the people who run for Congress and get elected are complete idiots.
Now, wait a minute. A law degree, you got to be smart to get a law degree, don't
you? Most of them don't have a law degree.
Yes, they do.
Most Congress people do not have a law degree.
I got to look that up.
Most Congress people barely have an education, and I know that a lot of them use their father's or mother's pull in order to get a graduation. Teddy Kennedy did, at least. He's not with us anymore.
I think you're just making a very broad brush thing without more details on it.
To me, it's... Groucho Marx was once asked, did he belong to the Beverly Hills Golf Club? And he said, and this... I use this to think about our Congress. Groucho Marx said, I wouldn't belong to any club that would have me as a member.
By the way, we've been talking about the Samsung phone and the Apple iPhone, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm piling on, okay? But
you're piling on, Hank.
Well, Samsung has a washing machine problem. And
now, this is the computer show, folks. This is not the the laundry.
But it's consumer electronics also, you know, and they've had a couple of a washing machine explode on them. It's from the vibration, though, okay? However, if you think about it, it's all under processor control, so obviously the program is not programmed properly, you know, to take care of it.
This may be a coincidence. This may be a poltergeist. I don't know. But I'm sitting here holding a Samsung Note 4 in my hand, and Hank started saying all these bad things about Samsung. And without doing anything, I promise you, without doing anything, the stupid phone just rebooted, losing what I was reading.
No, I saw your thumb. You hit the wrong button, okay?
No, this is not a reboot sort of thing.
Yeah, you sure? You know, Joe, one of the things that I've been railing at, and the personal computer show is really, we don't get into religion, we don't get into politics, but we do talk about from a consumer point of view. And one of the things that I've been over the years been railing about is the patent office, the U.S. Patent Office.
I had a good one this time.
Oh, I can't believe this. A Chinese company called Tencent filed a patent, and they got approval of it, okay? And would you believe what the patent was on?
Go ahead. I don't believe it, so you'll have to say it.
Drawing a square within a screen.
No. Drawing a rectangle.
A rectangle.
And then putting a square under the rectangle.
Right. And and they patent that, and they say, wait a minute, that's a graphical thing, and it's like, it's almost as bad as the one-click transaction with Amazon.
You know, we're back to these old-time lawyer jokes.
No. First of all, you know how many patent lawyers work in the patent office?
How many?
Almost 2,000.
And what do you have when you have 2,000 patent lawyers on the beach buried up to their neck in sand?
Oh, come on. Don't tell me it's a good start. No, seriously. First of all, to be a patent lawyer, you have to have two. You have to pass a two-phase exam, okay? And you find that most patent lawyers they have an engineering degree and a law degree in most cases, and so you say to yourself, you're not a dumb person if you have a engineering degree and a law degree, right?
You might be. I don't know. Did you cheat on the exams?
No. Listen. By the way, the Supreme Court is going to be reviewing how patents are granted, and all of this may be thrown out the way, you know.
I didn't know about that, but who has brought the complaint?
Oh, I forgot who, but remember the whole bit with Apple and Samsung on the rounding of the corners? And one says, it looks like you rounded it. Yeah, but it's a different rounding. And they said, no, it went against Samsung because you rounded it. Doesn't matter what the curve is and so on. And I remember with when it comes to fonts like the E, you know, that middle horizontal line in the middle of E, you know, when you write a capital E, okay? If you put it high up, it's different. If you put it down lower, you know, from the middle, and they say, oh, well, that you can patent. You know what? You go crazy with these patents.
A design patent is a very difficult thing. Ask any jeweler, because jewelry can only be patented as to the design. And if it's slightly different, I think in Tiffany, the Elsa Peretti bean and the millions of knockoffs of it, and they took it to court and they said, no, it's a different bean.
Well, hey, Joe, I for this past week, I've been doing a product review. And I think I would like to go over that product review.
Well, what was the product?
Well, we talked about cord cutting a couple of weeks ago, and a listener is very passionate about cord cutting. And he said, you know, there's a lot of material that you can get without getting cable service or, you know, from these companies. And they're free. It's free on air. And I said to myself, well, given the opportunity, let me get one of these antennas and let me give it a try. And there's
now, before you go any further, you should tell the folks that you live out in the boondocks.
No. I live in Queens.
That's the boondocks.
Wait a minute. Just because they don't shovel in Queens when there's a snowstorm, because everything is done for
men. It's not a question of shoveling. It's a question of how tall the buildings around you are.
We got some tall buildings, Joe.
Yeah, you got 4-story, 5-story.
No. You have the city bank building is tall.
And is that on your block?
It's not on my block, fortunately.
Is it in your neighborhood?
And in your neighborhood, you don't have any tall buildings?
I don't.
I have an 18-story building half a block from me.
The point is, if you're in an 18-story building yourself and you put your antenna either in your apartment or if you get permission to put it on the roof, the odds are it's not going to work. But if you're in a small building, 2, 3, 4 stories, then you have a good chance of having it work. Now, having said that, Hank, tell us your experience.
Well, John, who wrote a very long dissertation, and I'm basically paraphrasing what he's saying, okay? He's saying that as a lifelong user of over-the-air broadcasts, I feel it is my duty to say that I will not pay for TV. I know I should look into free streaming, which he means, watching TV on the Internet. Not all broadcasts are UHF, which is a problem. In other words, the stuff that is free on the air, he feels that it should be there's VHF and UHF in the standard, good old-fashioned TV, and then they broke it up into channels because and the analog, it's the bandwidth is so wide that you can break it up into 4 high definition channels, or if you want to make it not high definition, you can break it up into more.
I thought everything was now broadcast digital.
It is. So what he's saying is that when you buy an antenna, well, first of all, he wants that to be able to have all of the programs on UHF instead of CBS, the major networks, they're on VHF, okay? So he wants to be able to have it all on UHF and not everything on, and split over.
He would like them to change millions of dollars worth of equipment for his
TV. He doesn't have to, okay? Now, the reason is because some of the antennas are only UHF and some of the antennas are VHF. The antenna I use was, it's a combination of UHF and VHF. And let me finish what he said, okay? And he's complained to the FCC, but it seems like if they do not work for the citizens as much as they do for corporate America. Bottom line, digital could be a great alternative over cable, but FCC needs to do its job first. And after all is said and done, the net of what he said is he will not get any one of these, Time Warner or Fios or Cablecast, these packages. He refused to. And I tested an antenna called ANTOP, A-N-T-O-P, AT-100. It's an indoor TV antenna, and the size of the antenna is cardboard thin, and it measures about 12.5 by 11.5 inches, and it's very lightweight. On one side is white, on one side is black. You could put it up against the wall where the white shows, or you flip it around, it'll still work and have the black show, Or what I did was I put it behind a wooden credenza so nothing shows.
This is an internal antenna.
This is an indoor, okay? This is an indoor antenna. And it works. And it does not use any AC. In other words, you don't need to be near an AC circuit at all. It does not use batteries, so you can put it into an obscure, a place that is so difficult to get to, but you don't have to worry about changing the batteries. And in their literature, they said, if you go to the FCC.gov, and on coverage, if you key in your zip code, the FCC says, here is what you should expect in the number of channels that are available free on the air. So I key in my zip code, and it said 22 channels. It wasn't 22 channels I got.
What 22 channels did they promise you?
They tell you what the channels are. I got 43 channels.
Because you picked up beyond the area that was supposed
to be actually covered. What the FCC did was they listed the channels that were on English. There are many foreign language channels that are public over the air. that no one carries.
But they're low power.
Some are low power, some are high power. I got 40. Now, I figure that if I had orient that, now, I had the antenna below the TV sets itself, so which was down low. I think if I put it high up closer to the ceiling and somehow not ruin the decor of the living room, I could probably get well over 50 channels.
What would happen if you put it up in the attic?
People live in the city. Most people don't have an attic. You have an attic?
Yes.
Where?
In my closet.
Well, that's not an attic, okay? Come
on. I don't use it for clothes. I use it as an attic. No, but I'm sorry. You have an attic.
In other words, oh, by the way, I just want to tell you, it's not just CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, Pix, okay? There's movie channels on there, too. I was surprised.
That you get over the air.
You get Turner, I think, was it the TV?
Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, Turner Classic Movies. It's very interesting. And what I find is that the definition on it is better than some of the cable channels. Because the cable channels, what they do is you should keep it like, you know, no more than, if you want high def, you should keep it no more than four. You shouldn't parse that channel into more than four channels, okay? Well, they squeeze a whole lot of stuff in.
I just recently got a thing called RCN Cable, and they have, you know, millions of channels like Time Warner does. And I must say, Hank, that even the really obscure ones come in crystal clear.
Well, yeah. Now, I have to tell you that considering, by the way, you know how much your antenna cost?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, it's listed for $50, but you go to Walmart, it's under $23.
And if you can really live in a place where you're not in an apartment
building. And if you live in an apartment and you cannot have an outdoor antenna because you got to run the cable from the roof all the way down, I tell you, I was very surprised. This really works well. It really works well. And
how hard was it for you to hook up?
Okay, now, on this antenna that is 12.5 by 11.5 inches, like a little, you know, thin piece of cardboard, and it flexes, there's a cable that's attached to it. It's 10 feet long, and it has an RJ75 cable, and you just take off the cable connector and just screw it on, and that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
I tell you what.
And can I tell you what now? Am I going to replace the my TV cable, sir? No, but
why?
Because I have things that I would like to see that is not over the ear. However, I don't need that extra cable set top. If in another room, all I really watch is the standard channels. You know, so, you know, you could save some. But I'll tell you, the nice thing about it is that when there's a power shortage, you don't get any TV reception at all. You get no internet at all. I can still get TV reception with this antenna.
How? If there's no power, how can you plug? Where do you get your power for your TV?
I have a little power backup supply.
Do you really?
Yes, I do. It's cheap, by the way. I use cyber power to do it, okay?
UPS.
It's a UPS, and they're really relatively cheap now. In the old days...
How long would they run a TV set? An hour, maybe?
Well, it all depends on the size of the TV, as you know. The bigger the screen, the more juice you're going to use up. If you have a small... By the way, that's one of the things I can't find anymore. In the old days... You could buy a black and white small 5-inch TV for $59, remember?
Well, you can buy a small color one. You can't buy a small black and white one.
No. How small do you think small is?
Well, I can probably get a 7-inch color set.
Color TV?
Yeah.
You tell me where, because the smallest one I find for about $100 is 17 inches. I want something smaller than that.
No, there's a real small one. It comes from Japan. It does not have English language instructions. But how many instructions do you need to plug it in the wall here? Push here,
well,
buddy.
By the way, on this product, since I could use it to back up in case of outages and so on, thumbs up. It's a cheap item, and it really works well.
Again, the name of it?
Antop, A-N-T-O-P, and model number is AT-100.
and you say it's available in the big box stores.
Yeah, well, the thing was, they recommended going to Amazon. Amazon charges $35, and so I did a Google search, you know, and I said, wait a minute. Here's a place that is reliable, Walmart, right? And they charge less than $23. I said, well, you know what? If I try hard, I might even get it cheaper than that.
Well, when you get it down to $5, let me know.
You know, there was an announcement by, in the few minutes we have, I just want to go over this, that the Melinda Gates is the wife of Bill Gates. And as you know, they have formed a you know, along with Warren Buffett, they've combined some of their financial resources, and they've been, you know, looking into a global health program and initiatives and so on. And Melinda Katz now is starting a new program to get more women into the STEM program. STEM meaning science, technology, engineering, and math studies. And in the 1980s, she was an engineering major and a computer science major, I think, and. And in the 80s, I know that women participation in the STEM studies was over 30%. Now it's under 18%.
Well, there's a reason for that.
And I think that, you know, I think women are smarter than men, okay? You know why?
See, as long as we have people like Hank, we still will need companies like the American Civil Liberties Union.
No, wait. I'll tell you why women are smarter than men, okay? In this last go around of, you know, the graduates of the STEM students, you know, with those degrees, only 51% have been able to find work related to their degree of study, and 51%. And we're asking people, we need more engineers, we need more people, STEM students.
Stop. Who are we asking, and who's doing the asking? And that's the whole question, because a lot of people are asking people overseas to fill those jobs, and a lot of people are asking Congress to allow more people to come in from overseas. So when you say we're asking, make sure you understand who we are supposed to be.
Okay, I'll tell you who, okay? The schools are saying, you know, we need more engineering students.
The schools have an engineering department that has to make money, and they're not getting
filled. We have the government that shuts down NASA and says we need more engineers.
Exactly. Who says we need more engineers? Not NASA. NASA doesn't need more engineers.
The president says we need more people. We need more STEM studies.
The president is absolutely
to me,
it's one side of the coin. See, the problem in this country and in most countries is that you have a division of power. You have a president and you have a parliament or a Congress, and they're obviously going in different directions, and you can't get anything accomplished.
Well, last week we reported that the University of California is. In San Francisco, is replacing the IT staff with H-1B workers. And, of course, you know, typical nowadays, and before, you know, 20 years ago when this program started, it was really to hire people where there was a shortage of people and you really need the skill. Now we've got to train these people for them to take your job, okay? And so when you got a university doing it, and you know what the sad part is? We've been talking about the huge debt that the college students have when they get out of school, and yet we're putting them in the studies where they can't get work.
You know exactly what I'm going to say, and since
why don't you say it? This is Progressive Radio Network.
What I'll say is people like you are creating a major problem in this world, Hank.
I am?
Yes.
Tell me how.
Who are you going to vote for this fall?
I vote based on philosophy, not based on a whole lot of stuff that people, you know, claim.
Oh, then you're not going to vote at all, is what you're telling
me. No, I'm voting.
Based on philosophy? There's
yes.
Nobody there you can vote on.
Oh, yes, I can.
Who?
It's neither left nor right. It's based on the policies.
Who?
Okay. Huh?
Who?
Hey, well, you know one thing about this country I like? It's a secret vote, okay?
No, the reason I say who.
And by the way, I don't do it because this way. We have an audience. I don't want to offend anyone at all.
I understand that, and that's why I was pushing you to embarrass you.
Oh, you would do that, right?
I would never do that.
Huh?
But listen, folks, it's vitally, vitally important. Whether you agree with me or you agree with Hank or you agree with PRN or you agree with Fox, you got to get out there and vote. And base it on whatever you want to base it on, but just don't pull the knob or push the button blindly. Know what you're doing.
Well, I agree with you on that, Joe. And we have to sign off because it is.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Yes,
why do we have to sign off? They can cut it. There's somebody sitting out there at the board. He can pull his little button right in the middle of the sentence.
Be careful what you're saying. He puts his little button, okay?
Well, let me tell the folks, if they're still listening, that they can go over to WBAI, which is 99.5 on the FM dial here in the New York tri-state area, and Hank will be on again right then.
Yeah, we're going to sign off, and I just want to thank everyone for listening. And let me just say that we're going to be back same time, same station. And just remember the motto that I have is back up, back up, back up. And thank you, Joe, and we thank everyone for listening.
And test that backup, because it might not work.